The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast. So one of the hosts thinks Terry and Arnold should change his name to Terrier. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. And I am so happy to be joined by my friend. If you follow the draft, you know who he is. You probably listen to the Move the Sticks podcast. You see him on NFL Network. You see him during the draft. He is the one and only Daniel Jeremiah. Welcome back to the show. It's been so long.
It's good to see you. I will apologize in advance because we're kind of like doing TV in between this with NFL Network stuff. So their lights are like blinding. So I have my little podcast light, which is a little more friendly. And this is just like, it's a lot.
It looks good. I like your setup. I am so excited to have you on because I feel like I send you my thoughts and takes and ask you questions just throughout the year. And I feel like you were such a UW fan and you're a fan of the players and the prospects. So it was a particularly fun season for me. But we haven't had a chance to really dig into talking about the quarterbacks. And that's what we're doing today. I've been doing, this is really like I did team needs. We're doing the quarterbacks. We're going to do offensive skill players. We're going to do defensive players. We're going to do talk about the actual draft. I've been doing mock drafts, but it's been more of like a big board style. Who would you take? Not what we I'm going to get into what I think will happen. Mm-hmm. I like kicking it off with the quarterbacks, and this is certainly one of the more interesting quarterback classes in recent memory. Certainly, I would say better than the last couple of years in particular, although I guess last year with CJ Stroud being as awesome as he was and Anthony Richardson, we'll see. And Young, of course, but I don't know. I think I know where you have them ranked, but I actually haven't seen your latest rankings. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about the big three, although now it's a big four. Crazy.
I know.
We're going to talk on my podcast. It's a big three. Okay. We're going to talk about, and then we'll talk about, McCarthy, Penix and Nix. Let's start with Caleb. There's been moments where, I have colleagues who are higher on Jaden Daniels. So it is not written in stone that every person who talks about the draft thinks Caleb. I just had Nate Tice who likes May, which is certainly a far from consensus opinion. But he is my one. He was my one going into the season. He was my one during the season. During the season, Daniel, I wavered a little bit, or I had questions, and there was games, Notre Dame, Arizona, where I was like, there's a lot, I'm kind of getting a little bit nervous, and less about moving off of him at one and more like, ooh, I don't know if he's this, Andrew Luckian type prospect. But my process with this has been then, as soon as the Super Bowl ends, I go back, watch the quarterbacks, and when I went back and watched Caleb on tape, I felt better than ever about him at one. So where are you on him right now? What has been your journey with him compared to what I just said? And how confident do you feel in him? Not him going one, but how you feel about him.
Well, I'm glad you used the word journey, because I think that's the part that gets lost in a lot of this stuff, is that we can put it in one game vacuum, or even, one series a game or a season, and not take the collective. And if I'm going to go through my Caleb journey, I'll give it to you like this. You watch TV, you watch the games on TV first, right? As they're happening real time last year. And I'm like, this kid's unbelievable. Like he's the first pick in just about any draft. He's that talented. So then you get to the summer, you dig into the tape. And I'm like, okay, this matches everything that I casually watched when I studied it deeper. I'm like, okay, it's as good as the TV experience. It may be even better just with all that he can do and his skill set, everything else. Then you get into this year, you watch TV, and obviously like the Notre Dame game, and you mentioned the Arizona game, some other games pop in there. And I'm like, gosh, I guess his play really fell off. And so then I get to the end of the year and I jump into the tape and I'm like, okay, the tape is much kinder than the TV experience. And like examples of that, which I'll use this all the time, is like people will get frustrated with him and hero ball and trying to do too much and whatever analogy you want to use. And I'm like, do you realize when they're rushing three and dropping eight and you have a clean run through? Like, do you realize what that does to somebody? Because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. It's hard enough to throw against a team that's dropping eight when you've got all day back there, just because it's so much to sift and sort through. We've seen it. That was an issue you know, going back with USC quarterbacks for a long time is that teams just decided to do that. We're just, they're not going to be physical. They're not going to run the ball. We're going to rush three and drop eight, and then and they're in trouble. So I go back and watch the tape. I can excuse away some of those things. And then I'm comfortable with him as a top guy. And then now that we've made it through the whole process for me of like getting through all the combine guys and I have extra time, I'm like, I kind of like, where did I fall in love with this guy again? Let me go back to the 22 tape again and just remind myself of what he looked like when he had just a decent offensive line, a legit number one wide receiver with Jordan Addison, who he trusts. And I don't know what when you see what you thought of it, but I just thought there was so much more conviction and trust in 22 of like, this guy's going to be there. He's going to win. I'm going to let it rip. Versus this year, wanting to see things kind of open up a little bit, not having that faith or trust.
Yeah, and you would see that trust erode like over the course of games. Yeah. Like, and as the season went on, candidly, like the thing about the long time to throw, which is, this is the question with Caleb, holding on to the football. He is a throw the damn ball quarterback, especially on, when you're watching the TV copy, because you can't see that no one's open, right? Mm-hmm. The thing about it is, when you watch, when he does throw the ball quickly and he does play in structure, it looks great. And I think that's why I feel good about him. Because for me with him, it's just such a question of willingness more than ability, and that willingness being heavily affected by circumstances at USC. I could not believe how bad the pass protection was, by the way, upon rewatch. I think that I don't know why, if I didn't appreciate it during the season on TV, but oh my God, it is nightmarish back there. But when he was kept clean, his numbers are great. The tape is great. So I think I just feel good going into the draft, because when I think about other quarterbacks in the past where I felt like they took too long to throw the damn ball, Justin Fields, who he's taking the place of, you don't have the same reasons that you have for Caleb. You can explain all of it, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's why if I'm a Bears fan, I feel good knowing that the question marks that come with him all have rationale behind them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things that, and I know Dan is a big Jaden guy, and I love Jaden too. I like Caleb more. But one of the conversations we've had a bunch of times, and I think we've texted about this, is like, look, do I want to drop Caleb into the Bears, even with this good group that we feel like they have, and ask him to, you know, quote unquote, play quarterback for 25 to 30 snaps a game? No, you got to be smart about it. But you can bake in easy completions. He's got the quickest hands I've ever seen of a quarterback. Like Tua had insanely quick hands. So RPOs, just those quick now screens, getting the ball out of your hands, you're going to bake a handful of those in every game. You're going to have movement throws where everything's going to be simplified from a read standpoint. You're going to have those, which he can do in his sleep. You get a handful of those. He's going to be creative and make some things happen on a handful. Like, in order for him to just drop back and I need you to get to 1 to 2 to 3 and like play quarterback, with his skill set early on, I don't even know that you need to do that, but, you know, 5 to 10 times a game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think that you've got to have, you have to plan in place with him going forward, but everything's there. Like, it's all there, and you've seen him do everything that you need to do.
Is there an aspect to his game that you feel is under, because everybody, the out of structure throws, the playmaking, the arm talent is, you know, the first thing you talk about. It's the first thing you see. It's the first thing most people are familiar with him. I'll throw one for me. Mm-hmm. I really like his physicality as a scrambler. That was something I was just talking to, I went on the Bill Simmons podcast this week, and he was talking about Daniel's size, and I was saying, well, Williams is what, 6'1" or something, but he's kind of built like a young Russell Wilson, where he's just dense. And there are plays a lot of times in the low res where like, he kind of like, you can see him kind of like, he's unafraid of contact. And I think that is something that I feel like, oh, okay. Like, you're not going to call that many design runs for him. It's obviously more about his scrambling ability, but I think that's something that is maybe a little bit underappreciated. Is there anything like that for you with him?
Yeah. Well, first of all, to echo your point, like, he's super sturdy, like, and he's thick. He's got a big lower, he's got huge hands. So like, when there's crowds around him, he doesn't feel small. And that's one of the things, truthfully, that maybe I didn't give enough attention to with Bryce, is that, you know, and Bryce's frame, we talked about his frame, but when it closed in on him, gosh, he felt, you could feel it. It just felt smaller. I don't feel that way with Caleb. I think that's a good call there with Russ, because Russ was built like a wrestler. For me, it's a lot of times when you get guys that are, you know, athletic and power throwers like he is, they don't have the other pitches and they don't have the other clubs, whatever analogy that there's a play. And the game is escaping me. No, it was Utah 22 where he escapes out to the right. He gets right up to the line of scrimmage and just lays the ball up and feathers it down the sideline. It required such deft touch. Like, he can make every single type of those throws. He is not just simply a, you know, big arm power thrower.
Yeah. I would love, like, maybe someone said this, like a cut up of just all of his short stuff, because like just the little throws to the flat. No, it looks really good. I think, which is what it makes it frustrating when, and this is just, again, the negative, when guys are open, like USC runs a ton of mesh, right? Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of examples of him passing up.
He turns it down a lot. Yeah.
And then I'm like, you got to take that in the NFL, man. You got to take that every time. Because when he does take it, it's always, he's, I think, more than any other quarterback in this class, probably has the best accuracy to me. I'm not sure. But it's not always on display because of his choice of when to use it. But when he does, I think he just throws such a pretty ball. I guess that brings me to my last question about him, because there's not really that we can move on to, like, the if he doesn't
just
succeed,
want to get to JJ, but go ahead.
Well, I do like JJ. If Caleb Williams doesn't succeed in the NFL, what will it be because of?
I think what we were talking about a little bit earlier, which is they're going to try and force him to play. You know, I think there's this talk, and we've all said it, and it's true. He has to be more on schedule, right? More on schedule. He doesn't need to be exclusively on schedule. And I think if you try and turn that into him and beat that into him and take away some of the creativity and the fun of makes him who he is, I think you could mess him up. So that would be my cautionary tale, is, okay, we can rein him in a little bit. Let's not get bored taking completions, which he did at times. And I don't want to make excuses, but every series when you watched him, I swear, every time he came out on first down, there was 7 more points on the other side of the scoreboard. And I think that affected him to the point of, like, I've got to go now. We've got to score, and we've got to score 3 plays ago. I think that'll be alleviated once he gets with a really good defense, which he's going to be with in Chicago. I think some of that will just naturally disappear. But I always get a little bit nervous when we're going to take him and just and scare him out of being who he is. Like, let him still, that's part of who he is, to play like that. More, yes, but not exclusively.
Yeah, it is pretty unique for the first overall pick to be going to a situation that I think we both agree is better than the second and third overall picks in
significantly.
This
significantly.
Significantly. To the point where, I mean, Dan and I were just talking about, like, New England. We were like, oh, you should sit. But then I'm looking at Washington. I'm looking at this offensive line. Let's start go here. Nobody really knows what Washington's going to do. And I do feel like Drake May versus Jaden Daniels. I have colleagues who like Daniels over Williams, but that seems set in stone. May versus Daniels is the story between now and April, the end of April. So let's talk about these two prospects kind of in comparison with each other, if that's okay. What is something, like, when you see this Daniels rise, what do you think is behind it? Like, what, like, and you can explain to me whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Like, why do you think he is suddenly just rising up people's estimation?
I think there's two things, and I think they're both valid. Number one, he played really dang good this year. Yes. So the tape is really good. I don't think people are fabricating this. I don't think people are making something up here that's something that doesn't exist. He played great. And there's also the ghost of Joe Burrow. Of the things that you might try and knock Jaden for, well, gosh, he's been around forever, and this is the one year, and it's so much better than any other year that he's ever had. Are we overvaluing this? And then we're like, well, I don't know. Joe Burrow did the exact same thing at the exact same school with a bunch of really talented players. And we've seen that immediately transition to the NFL. So it wipes away the 1 year excuse. So, I mean, I think that's the most obvious thing. I always, and you're so level headed. I know we're on the same page with this stuff. It's like, I feel like it's this guy you like, this guy you hate. And it's like, no, like, Jaden Daniels is really good. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. And there's a lot to be excited about. There are some things, though, just in terms of when he has to move around, reset his feet. Do I see him you know, with that same, you know, playmaking ability. You can be a great athlete and not a great playmaker. Those two things can both be true. And that's the way I kind of see his game. I appreciate it. I think if he goes somewhere where they can protect him and let him sit in the cockpit, we saw what that looks like last year. He could be awesome. But usually when you're going to go high, you're not going to have that luxury.
It's such an important distinction. The athleticism versus the second reaction ability are totally different skill sets. And he is the epitome of that. It's actually why, Daniel, I've had trouble comping him, because there aren't that many examples in the NFL of guys who have that kind of straight line speed. And it is special. I mean, God, just watch Florida, people, if you want to, like, watch this. It's unbelievable. When he turns a corner, it is unreal. And if he does succeed in the NFL, I think it will be because the impact of that speed on defenses, in the same way that when you watch Lamar Jackson on tape, you see linebackers pulled by him. You see defensive ends afraid to play the run. Like, you see that on tape with Jaden Daniels. Like, his, because of the way the numbers change when he's in the backfield, it makes everything easier. That is all real. But he is not like Lamar Jackson, the playmaker, at all. Like he's just not. He wants to sit in the pocket and throw the football. And when he doesn't do that, he wants to run. And that to me is what makes him a little bit more situation dependent than May. It's interesting because everyone, you know, I keep hearing talk about May as being like, oh my God, he needs to sit, he's so raw, whatever. And I'm like, whoa. Daniels is coming from football paradise. We talk a lot about the playmakers. Can we talk about the LSU offensive line? Daniel, you follow this more. Are those when are they draft eligible?
That left tackle is going to be a top 10 pick next year. So
he is so good. Yeah. Whereas May was not too and similar Caleb. From Caleb. Yeah, playing in absolutely horrible circumstances. And I think, you know, made some bad decisions and whatnot. But like that guy I've already seen in adversity. I think with Daniels, and I don't think this necessarily means he's not going to succeed, because Burrow, Stroud, have guys who have come into the NFL, but like he is coming. It will be a radically different situation for him on the two teams that we mentioned.
I think it's more of a story about the other guys, because I think when, if you look at the LSU situation, you can look at most of the top quarterbacks over the last handful of years have come from places where they were better than the people they were playing against. That was the draft. You remember we had, which has now turned out to not be a good draft, but the Trevor draft, right? So Trevor played with better players every week than the teams he played against. You could say the same thing about Justin. You could say the same thing about Zach Wilson that year. They were better than everybody they played against. Trey Lance at that level, his team was better than everybody they played against. Like all of them across the board, they were playing with better players. Mac Jones was in there. So like this, it's unusual. It's more so unusual what Drake and what Caleb had to do this year, is they're not at, you know, they weren't playing with superior talent. In fact, they were, you know, under talented in a lot of their games in terms of the personnel they were playing with. So that's why it's interesting. Jaden, for the comp thing, listening to you talk about that, the name that actually comes to my mind was Tannehill, because I would say Tannehill, everybody knows, obviously he was a former wide receiver, is an unbelievable athlete. Ryan Tannehill is not a playmaker. Like he's not, he's more comfortable playing kind of on time in the cockpit, delivering the ball. And then if you want to design things for him, if you want to call, you know, boot him or do different things design wise, you'll see his athleticism show up. And I'm thinking again, the younger version of Ryan Tannehill, but he was a phenomenal athlete, but nobody would ever label him as somebody who's avoiding and escaping and creating. That really wasn't the type of player that he was.
Yeah. Kind of not like Daniel, but a little bit of an upright runner too, in a similar. Yeah. I think that's why I struggle a little bit with Daniels, because I just feel that second reaction ability is so important. And when we talk about like the truly special quarterbacks in the league right now, that just tends to be a quality that they all have. And I try not to be like too traits pilled about, you know, these guys. And I do think there's a place for, you know, again, like Burrow was not like a traits guy. I actually think his arm is kind of similar to Daniel's in a way, like, you know, like very, not the not strongest, but accurate, throws beautiful fade. But so it's not everything. It's not. And like Daniel's, again, the legs, that is a trait. It's just different. It's a very specific thing. Let's just, you know, talk about May for a second. It does feel like he is sort of the weird I don't know if I believe that he's a follower per se. It's more like a media thing, I guess. I really liked his tape. I don't know. I kind of have been a little bit confused about the last few couple months or weeks or whatever as people have turned on him, because even the games, I'm looking at my notes, even the games that were like his bad games, I like Clemson, Miami. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that I liked. Now, and it's the stuff we've been talking about. I mean, he can make every throw. And it's not just that he has a bazooka, like he throws with touch. I think he is a playmaker. He uses the middle of the field, which is something that not all the quarterbacks in this draft do and so important in the NFL. I think his athleticism is incredible. He's always looking to throw when he is scrambling. He is looking to make a play. And despite the fact that his receivers are not good, he just kept shooting. I just love that about him. Like, he just keeps attacking relentlessly. Now, sometimes too much dip on the chip. He's got a lot. There's that Josh Allen brain kicks in sometimes, and he's trying to make throws across his body and do things he shouldn't, and that is a problem. But I just feel like there's so much there to work with. I cannot fathom a team in the top three not being tantalized by that.
Yeah, I just think that sometimes people have this illusion that there's some perfect prospect that exists where there's no filling in to do. But it's like, if you were to put the checklist together and we just started, okay, size, athleticism, arm strength, intelligence, toughness, work ethic, like all those things, and know this from talking to people at North Carolina as well as watching with your own eyes, all that stuff is off the charts. And then I've seen him layer the ball. I've seen him drive the ball. I've seen him escape and create. I've seen him on design quarterback runs. If you want to incorporate that into your offense early on in his career, all that stuff, he can do all those things. I think he gets penalized a little bit for, I would call it almost like the Lamar Jackson thing, where like the bad for Lamar, like some of his bad when he was coming out, like you could put like two plays a game where you could try and kill him and just be like, look at how bad this is with this particular player, this particular throw. And it's like, yeah, but you're going to bury the other 58 plays for these two. They're still just incompletions. They weren't even turnovers. They were just incompletions. But I think that with Drake, I think that there's the North Carolina quarterback thing, which people are enamored with, and the track record there, which I think we should be done with that. Once the Texas Tech demons got exercised by Patrick Mahomes, and once the Ohio State demons got exercised by CJ Stroud, are we really going to paint him with the North Carolina quarterbacks haven't worked out at the next level brush? Like, that seems kind of stupid. But I think that the people have taken the little things with Drake and they've blown it up. Nate Tice had done a video and showed some of the awareness stuff with him, which he did a great job of, some of the pressures and just the subtleties of being able to drift away from it, knowing how to buy some time. That showed me some pre-snap awareness as well as some post-snap execution. That's the NFL. That's what it is. It's seeing what you see before the snap, but then being able to adjust and recognize and make things happen after the snap. And he can do all those things. That's why I have him too over Jaden. And I'll say that knowing, okay, maybe the floor could even be a little lower than Jaden's, but I think there's so much more. I think there's so much more on the top end.
I think it's a higher range of possibilities. Yeah. And then, also obviously age and experience factors into that. I mean, I think that's with Jaden. It's like, not only is he an older and more experienced prospect, but you've also seen him in an optimized environment. Now, I struggle with, like, generally, I think it's just, you can't make sweeping generalizations. Oh, he played in a great situation, so he's hit his ceiling. And Drake, CJ Stroud was throwing to unbelievable receivers, comes into the NFL, he's amazing, right? So I think you have to be careful with that. But I do think with May and Caleb as well, like, the circumstances are just so significant to me. I don't know. And that was, I talked about making a supercut of Caleb's short stuff. I could make a supercut just based on my notes of drops that made me scream watching Drake May and UNC. It is contrast. I was just watching Bo Nix this morning, and I was texting you. I was like, oh my God, these receivers are awesome. It's just such a different experience. And that's why doing this is really hard.
That's why I'm always amazed when people who do this speak in absolutes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you realize the smartest people this game has ever had, like the 49ers, think about, they are the quarterback organization. They drafted Jim Druckenmiller back in the day. Like, this is not easy. Like, it is very hard. You do all your homework. You make your best educated guess. And then you see what situation these guys fall into and what they're, you know, some of the intangible stuff that we're not going to be privy to. And we see what happens. But I'm always amazed that some people are just, nope, it's this guy and the other guy stinks and let's move on. I that blows my mind.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about the next group.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So JJ McCarthy is the biggest riser. Let's talk about him because I have him in the second tier. I've been that way since the beginning. I feel that way after watching the tape, which, by the way, you can get through in a very quick afternoon. And yet, here he goes, jumping. I want to hear your thoughts on why you feel, whether you feel it's justified, or I guess what you think NFL teams are probably seeing, because I believe it's real. I want to start there. Like, I don't think this is just smoke. I think there's like a lot of legitimate interest in him. Because sometimes, you know, this time of year we hear, oh, this quarterback's climbing, and it's not really a thing. I think this is a real thing. You would know better than I. I guess I'll start, you know, I do think, I've talked about this a little bit, the same forces that are conspired to make Kirk Cousins a very desired quarterback amongst NFL offensive coordinators are probably the same ones that make a lot of these teams like JJ McCarthy, because you have a lot of play callers around the league coming from this Shanahan tree. And when I watch him, that's all I see is a Shanahan quarterback. And I have to think, Daniel, that is affecting his draft stock.
No, I think that's accurate. Look, to me, when we talk about the tiers, first of all, I have the other three guys in my top six overall players in terms of how I have them graded. McCarthy's my 20th player. So there's a separation there. But then I get asked, he's your 20th player. How in the world could you think that he goes in the top five? And I'm like, well, if you're willing to take a quarterback at 20, you're probably going to be willing to take him at five. Yeah. You're saying, if I'm going to take him at 20, I think he can be a starting quarterback and he's better than what I have on campus. And so you have enough teams with needs at the position where we can argue and debate how good JJ McCarthy is. But I think it's a more favorable argument for him when we say, okay, yeah, but is he an upgrade over what these three teams are playing with? Then the conversation starts to change a little bit. But the way I would describe it is the biggest disconnect between what some of the people in the league think about him and where a lot of people are in the media is that it's not a TV watching experience. When you watch it on TV, you're immediately, they run the ball every play. They play great defense. The game's over at halftime and he doesn't have to do anything. And then when you go through the tape, like to me, it was an acquired taste to get him to where I had him was because I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I can't game by game. This is not, I'm not getting this. So I went 3rd and 7+ every throw that he made, 3rd and 7+. And I was like, okay, if you stacked his 3rd and 7+ up against anybody in this draft, it looks really good. And you see him make different types of throws. You see him extend plays. You do it all. It's just the major issue is sample size. I was on one of our shows today and they were asking about this topic. And I said, look, the ingredients are all there that some of these other quarterbacks have. The difference is these other quarterbacks have made a cake and he's made a cupcake. Like it's like this just hasn't produced as much because the sample size is so small. But, you know, from the traits, the intelligence, you know, the toughness, I've heard the interviews he's done, you know, he's crushing all that stuff because Harbaugh's put him through an NFL grind in a million different ways. So that's why I think it's real.
I think it's real. And I, you know, again, like I sort of went through a journey with Brock Purdy that I think actually kind of reminds me a little bit. You know, as I was watching, I was like, okay, you know, I get like you have within the context of this offense, he's really giving you everything you need in terms of the willingness to throw over the middle of the field, the accuracy. McCarthy's probably a better decision maker, to be honest. I think he largely avoids.
He doesn't get bored with completions. Like that's like if you want to say Caleb, who gets very bored with completions.
Yeah. Nope.
JJ is the polar opposite. He will take it every single time.
And I just think there's so many play callers around the league. Like that's kind of what they want, rather than the creator per se. And he has tools that would. If he hits his ceiling, which is an unknown because of the small sample size, would give you like Purdy plus, right? Because I think he's a really good athlete. I think he's got a strong arm.
He's got more horsepower than Brock.
More horsepower. I don't think his arm is on par with you know, like the likes of May and Williams and Penix, but he throws a really, really nice ball on the move. These are all the things that these guys want. I have questions beyond sample size. There's just not a lot of touch throws on tape. That's something that kind of bothers me a little bit. There's some playmaking, but not a lot. I think my question is, did the picture I paint, does that sound like a top five pick? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, no, the answer to that is no. That's not the way that's painted. But again, I think, to me, when you look at the offenses that have taken off in this league, and a lot of them come from the same exact tree you referenced, they can play quarterback from the sideline, and this guy can allow them to do that.
Yeah,
because he can execute exactly as you give it to him, and he's not going to put you in a bad spot. I mean, I really feel that way. I don't think he's going to turn the ball over. I think a lot of drives are going to end in kicks one way or the other. And then you're going to ask him, you know, just to make a couple, you're going to design some things. He's going to see it when you set something up and you want to cash that in, he's going to see the picture. And then, you know, that's the thought process behind that. But there's way too much smoke and there's way too many teams that are, it seemed to be pretty pot committed about getting one in this draft.
Yeah. It's a supply demand. Issue. I mean, the idea of him going over the top three to me is,
I don't see that happening. Think that would. I think he's the fourth guy, and then it becomes those teams at 11, 12, 13 playing chicken. Do you want to sit, or do you want to try and just go do it?
It's so funny because there's three teams, like you said, and then there's two possible trade destinations at 4 and 5, and it's like, that office, like everybody's kind of pointing at each other and I'm like, who's going to move? Like, is Minnesota going to trade with Arizona or are they going to trade with LA? Are the Broncos willing to jump them? It's so unpredictable because it really is like, there's just so many variables right now.
That's why I don't think, I mean, I could see a trade to 3 happening before we get to Detroit. Outside of that, I don't see how anything happens until we're on the clock. And just from talking to the teams that I've talked to, and they're not going to give me all the answers to the test, but I do know from talking to them about like, who's not like of those four guys, the guy that maybe they don't like, And it's different from a bunch of these different teams. So why would you make a trade early to go up to four with the assumption that whatever guy your guy is, you don't know if he's going to, you don't know if he's going to be there. You don't know how the first three shake out.
So this might be a goes down to the wire kind of draft day.
Yeah.
I do. There is a lot to like. I don't want to sound like a McCarthy hater. I just want to like, if we did a redraft, Brock Purdy would go high, you know, and you have to think about these quarterbacks, not just in the context of these trends and NFL offenses. And when you like Michigan, when you watch him, he's under center, he's booting, he's throwing to these, like, you know, I kind of was like, yeah, and he likes throwing over the, he throws to the middle of the field. That's a big deal. That's something that I think you can lobby criticism at. Daniels, who I talked about, Penix, who I'm, you know, is my guy in Washington. The fact that he's willing to do that, it's so easy to imagine an NFL play caller being like, yep, that's, I know he can run my offense. And that's not a small thing. I
can he bring the tight end with him? Can he bring the junior tight end with him? Holy cow, is that guy good?
Okay. Let's wrap with Penix and Knicks. What's your ranking?
So I have them very close to each other. I have Knicks just over Penix. And that somewhat is health and durability related.
They're so different.
Oh, 100%. They're going to go into polar opposite offenses. Like, they're not going to anything. They don't look like they play the same sport.
Yeah. I obviously am a UW fan, so I've watched Penix a lot. I've watched a lot of Knicks, of course. Mm-hmm. This morning I had a chance to kind of rewatch. That offense makes it a little hard for me to get a feel. I guess I'll start there. Both offenses in a way, although Penix, they're both playing. So both Oregon and UW, amazing skill players, very cool play calling, like offensive lines, both awesome. So they'll start there. But with Knicks, and both use, like, Penix, very play action dependent quarterback, by the way. Like, his numbers in play action are so much better than when he's doing straight dropbacks. But, you know, there's a lot of tight window throws. He has every pit. Like, the throws are amazing. With Knicks, the athleticism is obviously dramatically better, and he's really good at making plays under pressure. And he is a playmaker, which is very different. However, it's so collegey. Like, I actually was like, I don't know how any of this will translate. That was kind of my feel. I don't know if I'm being too hard on him, but I struggled to see the translation at times.
So, if you're outside with kids playing at a pool, I look at these two quarterbacks as like, if the pool is like this rectangular pool, that every throw that Knicks makes is on the front end of the pool and every throw that Penix makes is on the back of the pool, but nobody's ever in the pool. Either way, you're either underneath defense or you're over the top of defense. Neither of these guys really work within the defense. Now, the thing about Knicks is I do think, you know, in that system where it is just pick and stick, and we are going to, if you have a bad offensive line, like, I think some people look at it, if you have a bad offensive line, well, give me the most athletic quarterback. I'm like, no, screw that. Give me Bo Nix, because the ball is gone. He is going to see it quick and it's going to be gone. It's going to be second and seven, but, you know, or second and five, but he's going to make quick decisions. He's going to avoid negative plays, and you're always going to be advancing the football. But and then with Penix, it's like, dude, it is big game hunting, and fortunately with the offensive line that he had, he could do that, and the wideouts they have, it's fun to watch. And then, even, you know, I joke about the pool, but also he just lives outside the numbers. Like, he could throw out routes all day long, deep comebacks. If you want him to do that, he can. I mean, you saw at the Senior Bowl, he just lets it rip. But both of these guys are going to have to play a little bit more in the mud, so to speak.
Yeah, it's right. You're right. They are kind of like at these opposite ends of the spectrum, and then you're sort of missing something a little bit. It's interesting. You mentioned Bo Nix is an unbelievably fast time, but that ball is out. But regardless of, it's almost Tua-like at times, because he will push it downfield and it's coming out real fast, which I think, and you know, watching him in that, wow, I hadn't thought about that before, but there are some similarities.
There's a lot of similarities with him and Tua. Like if you're looking for comparisons,
I haven't either.
And I'm so stealing it. So just don't, can we just cut this portion of the podcast out? Cause I'm going to steal that.
Especially like with the RPOs and
quick hands.
Yeah.
Ball's gone.
Wow.
It's fast break football. It's like, it's almost similar to like the old school Mike Leach, like early days, Texas Tech.
And he's got these two receivers in Franklin and Johnson, who's Johnson, Tez Johnson, who I was texting about. He's not coming out for the draft this year, but he's as fast as Franklin. Like the speed is unbelievable with these guys. Penix is interesting though, Daniel, because he has like a very notably low pressure to sack ratio, which is something I really look at with these quarterbacks. All the top three have pretty high ones, which is a little bit concerning, by the way. Mm-hmm. And Penix is very low. So often when that's the case, it's a sign with like Trevor Lawrence had a notoriously low pressure to sack ratio still in the NFL. And some of that is a quick release, but a lot of that is his pocket navigation. With Penix, it's more just that he gets the ball out quickly and at unconventional arm angles. That worries me a little bit because that's usually something I really look at, but I don't see that pocket movement quite there. What is interesting, and this is maybe something I've been dying to ask you about, is it was all there in the Texas game.
Texas, it was.
It was like CJ Stroud, Georgia, where every question I've ever had about Penix, the pocket movement, throwing over the middle of the field, stepping up versus pressure and throwing seam balls. There. He did it all. It's like he blacked out in one game. Mm-hmm. And like the Stroud thing, I find myself wondering, well, can you do that more? Like, should we look at this? Because it's just a very good defense that you played and you were amazing.
Yeah, I think, look, we used to always say in the scouting room, we had old scouts say, if he can do it once, he can do it. Like, it's not a debate. If he's done it, we know he can do it. And then it's up to us to try and figure out how to put him in situations where he does that. I also think with the Stroud thing in hindsight, we talked about him, you know, having better personnel than who he played against. Not that game he didn't. So it was like maybe some of the things, maybe when that happens in the Minnesota game one time, you don't see it. And it's like he took a one question test and he failed it. Versus now you get to go play against a really good team and now it's a 10 question test and all of a sudden now he's a B student. He got an 8, you know, he got 8 out of 10. And so I think having more opportunities to display that, I think that's part of it. But I am a firm believer. If you show me you can do it, I know you can do it. Like I can't unsee that. It all happened.
It was funny because I think most America who hadn't watched him was like, oh my God, he's going to be a top 5 draft pick. And I was like, no. You know, there's a lot you guys don't know, injuries. And we haven't even talked about that. Obviously injury history is very dramatic and it's going to be,
My hang up there. But I mean, like, I think when you're looking at him, I mean, there's a lot there. So, but when you're looking at him with teams and, you know, stylistically, God, I would just love to see him with the Raiders. And that's why I've put him there in one of the mock drafts. Like that's home. That just feels like home to me.
He needs to be somewhere where he'll play right away. Like, I think it was Mike Tannenbaum who was like, he can sit for a year behind Matthew Stafford. I was like, no, he's going to be, he can rent cars. Like he should not sit for a year. And he is a finished product, which is why, by the way, you know, he is not going to be one of the top few picks in addition to the injuries, but I play him.
If you had a game of horse, like a football game of horse, like you make this throw, I have to match it. And you put him in the Raiders quarterback room, that game would be over in 5 minutes.
I want him to go somewhere where he plays. So that is my hope for him. The Raiders make a ton of sense. 13's rich, but later I think I would be very excited about that if I was a Raiders fan. Danielle, before I let you go, Move the Sticks podcast, obviously check it out wherever you get your pods. Give me your unbelievably quick summary. I'm making you do one of Spencer Rattler because he is the guy who I get the most like, oh, Spencer Rattler. I feel like he's kind of like the dirty crush of NFL analysts. So what is your thought?
Yeah, first of all, live arm, seeing him throw in person, the ball does jump out of his hand. He's got everything you want from an arm talent standpoint. He's not big. He doesn't feel big when you're around him either. The biggest thing I can say about him is that in talking to his head coach, Coach Beamer told me, like, this kid was 2-year captain. They had all these injuries on the offensive line, never complained once. For the immaturity that he got tagged with from the show when he was in high school and maybe some of the early stuff at Oklahoma, he's made it through all that stuff. He's come out the other side a really good dude, on top of being somebody who got better throughout his college career. So he's the one that I've kind of said, if I was going to take a flyer on one outside of the top 6 guys, he's my 7th quarterback. I mean, that'd be the one you take a flyer on.
Yeah, I like him as a developmental option. All right, well, this has been super fun. I will be joining you on Move the Sticks, I think, in a couple of weeks, so we can talk quarterbacks or whatever you want then. Otherwise, you
change all of our opinions. We change all of our opinions at that point in time. We just go complete opposite.
You guys can check out Daniel on the NFL Network, which he's returning to right now. Bye, Daniel.